This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Inventor, showman, eccentric, genius. Depending on your point of view, Nikola Tesla was at least one and perhaps all of these things. A new biography also suggests Tesla still has much to teach us about the nature of innovation. The author of this new biography is no stranger to innovation himself. He's been writing about it for more than 20 years, and his fascination with technology dates even decades further back. Feel free to ask him about the dead battery collection he started as a kid, the one he used to clean with his mother's good linens. Simply put, when author Bernie Carlson is around, you know you're going to hear fascinating stuff. When you've got Bernie talking about Nikola, well, fascinating probably doesn't begin to describe what's coming up right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. The book is titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. Its author, W. Bernard Carlson, is our guest. Our phone number, easy to remember, 888-WMRA-TALK. Bernie, it's been far, far too long. Great to see you back in the Insight studios.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Well, one of the things you come back to a number of times in your writings on Tesla is that what he has to tell us about the nature of innovation, especially a fascinating aspect of innovation that you say has the power to radically change the world. So I want to ask you about that and invite our audience to share their thoughts as well. And again, for you who are listening, you are invited to join this conversation at 888-967-2825. But first, Bernie Carlson, please pretend I am someone who knows absolutely nothing, or at least almost nothing, about this guy Nikola Tesla. Tell me just who he was and what you think most anyone should know about him.
Well, Tom, Nikola Tesla was a rival of Thomas Edison, and he was active at the end of the 19th century, 1890s, early 1900s. And as a rival of Edison, he worked in electricity, and he was the developer of alternating current. Edison was famous for direct current and incandescent lighting. Tesla developed alternating current, which is what is powering the station today and runs all of our household appliances, and we use it in our businesses. And Tesla was important for alternating current because he developed the AC motor. As I often like to say, before Tesla, you only had electric lighting. After Tesla, you have electric light and power. You needed a motor in order to take advantage of electricity for providing power for all sorts of applications. So his first big accomplishment is alternating current. But he also had a second act, and a fascinating second act, in that he was not only a rival of Edison, but also a rival of Marconi. And at the turn of the 20th century, around 1900, Tesla and Marconi were racing neck and neck to develop what we now call radio. Tesla, because he worked on the motor, was a power guy. And so he thought, what I want to do with radio is develop something that will allow us to distribute power more effectively all over the world.
So let me just make sure I'm following you.
Because sure.
When I hear the word radio, I think of what we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. But when you're saying radio, I guess maybe I should interpret in that in my head as these guys, Marconi and Tesla, we're looking at different ways to use radio waves.
Exactly. So in the late 1880s, a series of scientists, and particularly a man named Heinrich Hertz in Germany, discovered electromagnetic waves. And Tesla was one of the first people to read and learn what Hertz was up to and begin to sort of say, how can I make technology that takes advantage of these electromagnetic waves and applies them to new technologies and new applications? And in fact, Tesla was doing it 4 or 5 years before even Marconi began to experiment with electromagnetic waves. So both of them are using radio waves to do different things. One wants to do exactly what we're doing, which is communications. That was Marconi. Tesla, on the other hand, has a vision that you can not only do communications, but you can also send power through the earth, taking advantage of radio waves.
So you would be able to make motors, machines, work through radio waves.
That's
that
right.
You send through the earth.
That's right. And so imagine that you would no longer need all of these power lines that we have strung up over our streets or through conduits underneath streets, that you would basically have a true wireless world. And Tesla was absolutely convinced that he could build a system that would not only provide, say, service to an entire city or an entire country, but the entire world.
So while they were both working on that, different aspects of how to use radio waves, Marconi sort of wins the battle, at least in terms of proving that radio waves can be used to send signals, to send communication.
That's right.
And that's why we associate Marconi's name with radio.
And Marconi had a couple of things that were going for him that Tesla didn't have at that later point in his career. Marconi has good business backers that basically sort of say, young man, keep this project focused on a very specific application, and in particular an application where you have no competitors. So Marconi's very first business application was ship-to-shore signaling. So there's no telephone lines that can connect the ship. There are no telegraph lines that can do that. So you've got it made. And so that was the first thing that the Marconi company went after. Tesla, of course, is competing against all the utilities and power companies that are existing if you're going to bring about wireless power. In other words, you're going to put essentially Consolidated Edison or Virginia Power or whichever electric company you have out of business if you can successfully do wireless power. So that was one of the problems that Tesla had in comparison to Marconi. The other thing that is a challenge is how do you demonstrate to people that your technology actually is working and working well? And Marconi was very skilled at crafting a series of demonstrations beginning when he went into this work in 1895 up to and beyond 1901. 1901 is the big year for Marconi because that's when he transmits a signal from England to Newfoundland in North America. And so he is the first to transmit across the ocean. And that gets everybody's attention. And Marconi was very skilled at a series of demonstrations that captured people's imaginations, and they understood that. Whereas Tesla, when he's working on wireless power, sort of says, trust me, I can do it. It's going to be wonderful. And then people would sort of say, including journalists or investors, okay, where's the results? And the only results he had were these beautiful photographs that he created when he had a laboratory, or as he said, an experimental station in Colorado Springs in 1899. And there, many people have seen these wonderful photographs. They show Tesla reading a book very calmly, and overhead, going from one part of this gigantic machine to another, are 100-foot lightning bolts that he's created. And he, by sitting there reading very calmly, is the master of the lightning.
And the photographs were faked.
That's right. That particular photograph was faked. In other words, you wouldn't want to actually be in the room when that much electricity is flying around. So what they did is they took one picture with Tesla seated in front of the machine reading his book, and then he got out of the way, and they cranked up the machine. Now, another thing about...
They took a second picture.
And they took a second picture, exactly. So it was a double exposure on a glass plate. Now, another thing that people get all hung up about is this. They assume that that going to Colorado Springs or seeing Tesla's laboratory, you would always see these sparks flying around. And there's a wonderful scene in the movie back from 2006 called The Prestige, where David Bowie plays Nikola Tesla. And it's perfect in that there's smoke and there's flashing lights and it's all very dramatic. And out of the smoke, it clears, comes David Bowie playing Tesla. Well, I have to break it to you that when Tesla's actually experimenting with electromagnetic waves and that giant Tesla coil, which is what he built in Colorado, you would not have seen anything like that because that is all wasted energy. If you're trying to pump energy into the earth, you're not trying to have it be wasted in terms of making big sparks.
So technology historian Bernie Carlson, my question was, if I know nothing about this name, this guy, Nikola Tesla, before we get into some of the depth that you've probed in this new biography and some of the lessons you think that apply in today's world, what should I know about the guy? What you've told me so far is that he's the guy who invented alternating current that can be used to run motors. So
correct.
If we're driving a car today or using a blender or any other kind of machine, we're only doing it because Nikola Tesla made it possible.
That's right.
And then the second thing is he's the guy who had some interesting ideas for how to harness radio waves, But we don't know him for that because those ideas didn't really come to fruition, at least not yet.
Not yet. And there are people
still working
on it. He
died in the 1940s, so he's probably not going to finish that work.
No.
But what else should I know about Mr. Tesla?
The other things that you should think about in terms of Mr. Tesla is he represents a different style of invention. We often imagine that there's only one scientific method and that we teach kids that you should do a hypothesis and then you should do an experiment and then you should analyze your data and confirm or disconfirm your hypothesis. That's fine for science. In invention, inventors are a lot like artists, and they have different styles, different ways of solving problems and being creative. And Tesla represents a very particular, very powerful way of solving problems in terms of invention. He has a very distinct inventive style, which is absolutely almost polar opposite to what his rival Thomas Edison had. And it's important for looking at Tesla to be able to think about that style or that approach that he had and what he says about innovation and creativity. So not only should he be in the history books because he contributes key technology such as alternating current, but also because he signals to us that there are different ways that innovation takes place in our economy.
So to you who are listening, what does the name Nikola Tesla mean to you? Is it somebody you learned about in school, or is it somebody that when you found out about him somewhere in your adulthood, you wondered why you never heard about him in school? He certainly has some cachet in popular culture today, as our guest was mentioning. He is featured in the movie Prestige from a number of years ago. Tesla as an automobile is making some inroads in our economy today. If you're a fan of the sci-fi TV show Warehouse 13, you hear him referred to all the time. But is it a name with which you are familiar? And if so, what do you think we should know about him? 888-WMRA-TALK is the easy way to remember our phone number. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on our Facebook page where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. The book is titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. Its author, Bernie Carlson, is our guest. Bernie, isn't there something about Mr. Tesla that we ought to mention in terms of why he has so much mystique associated with him? I mean, he certainly was a showman, wasn't he?
Tesla's style of invention that we were talking about a moment ago was built around the idea that you get very good patents, intellectual property around your inventions, and then in order to get enough money to keep inventing, you have to get everybody excited about the patents. So his strategy was patent, promote, sell the intellectual property. And to get a great price for his inventions, for his patents, he was the master of creating illusions around his inventions. And he would have absolutely stunning demonstrations. He was an individual who, again, as you were talking about, was over 6 feet tall, 146 pounds thereabouts. So he was always skinny as a rail, very intense, wiry sort of individual. And he would stride out on stage in absolute perfect evening dress and greet the folks. He was born in Europe, ladies and gentlemen, in his wonderful Eastern European Serbian accent. And then he would proceed to do demonstrations that would just absolutely wow the crowd. And one of the most fabulous ones was in 1892 in St. Louis. He walked out, and before he said anything, he walks up to a giant transformer, a Tesla coil, and he has a brass ball in one hand and basically what we would think of as a fluorescent tube, but a clear glass tube. He put the brass ball up to one of the terminals, and all of a sudden, the tube lit up brilliantly, and the crowd went nuts.
Nikola Tesla, our focus. Historian Bernie Carlson, our guide. Our conversation continuing in a bit more than 1 minute. And Tim in Harrisonburg, you'll be our first call when we get back. W. Bernard Carlson is a professor of history and a professor of science, technology, and society at the University of Virginia. He also chairs UVA's Department of Engineering and Society. In his spare time, he writes books. His latest, a biography of legendary inventor Nikola Tesla, and that book is titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Next to Harrisonburg, Tim, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Dr. Carlson, please.
This is Jim. I had a question. Niagara Falls, I'd like you to discuss about Edison and Tesla and the development of AC current and what kind of a real fight it was.
That's a great question, Jim. And Niagara Falls was a turning point in the history of electricity, as you well know. Up to that time, most of the power stations that were about and around were using direct current that was inspired by Thomas Edison and allowed people to have the new form of electric lighting, incandescent lamps, that Edison is so famous for inventing. In the mid-1890s, a set of backers, but in particular a man named Edward Dean Adams, had the vision that Niagara Falls was a tremendous source of power and that the way to develop Niagara Falls was to figure out a way to basically harness the falls and transmit the power over a distance. And the first idea was to transmit it not from the little town of Niagara Falls and build a power plant there to Buffalo, New York, where there were lots and lots of factories and mills that could use the power, and they needed to come up with a way to get the power over that 26 miles, and alternating current was the ideal way to do that. Lots of people, as you probably have read in some books, know that Tesla is often given credit for sort of single-handedly developing the power system at Niagara Falls. And what I found, which was really much more interesting, was it was a whole team of engineers at Westinghouse and other consultants that Edward Dean Adams brought in. But the person that kept kind of bringing Adams back one more time to have another look at alternating current and to realize what a great potential it had was Tesla. And it was one of my great fortunes was to find a series of letters where Tesla, month by month, keeps working on Adams and giving him the arguments as to why you ought to use alternating current for this really important electrical demonstration.
That's really interesting because Westinghouse was still, when I was in Buffalo or south of Buffalo, big part of that. And it's just very, very interesting part of history. And, you know, I'd love for the radio waves to go through the earth. I think that'd be great. But
we all would love it. I'm so tired of having extension cords in my house that I'm the first to agree. And one of the applications that they've actually been able to use Tesla technology on is you can now buy it from various companies, a little tray that allows you to charge your cell phone without having to actually plug it into the wall. In other words, there's a coil in the tray, and there's a coil in a back that you put a replacement back on your cell phone. And as soon as you walk in, you just put the cell phone on the tray, and it charges it up. And where the researchers actually really want to go is they want to reach the point where you don't even have to take your cell phone out of your pocket or your purse. As soon as you walk into the room, the phone detects that it's in the field, it's in the zone of being able to be charged, and it just charges itself.
Is that an evolution of Tesla's ideas?
Absolutely. In other words, he had a vision that you would basically have Tesla in the world of electromagnetic waves. One of the things that he really understood was how you could tune two devices, a transmitter and a receiver, and if you get them to be exactly at the right resonating frequency, then you can transmit power from the transmitter to the receiver. And so essentially this idea of using coils is the modern version of that. And there are some different things that people have, of course, worked out in terms of how to make it efficient, but it still follows Tesla's basic idea.
Jim, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you for your time and conversation.
So this book is more than 400 pages before you even get to the notes and the references and the index. It's titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. But so much of the beginning part of this, Bernie Carlson, you go into, I think, what probably is fundamental for anybody to be able to grasp the points you're making later in the book about what Tesla has to teach us on the nature of innovation and how that can radically change the world. What you go into is so much of what he experienced in his early life, including his childhood. Now, he was Serbian, but he lived in an area of Europe that today we would call Croatia. This is back in the days of the Austro.
He's born in 1856, so yeah, so 1860s, 1870s is when he's growing up.
The Hungarian Austro or
Austro-Hungarian Empire. Yeah.
And religion was an important part of at least his family's life. His grandfather, his father, at least one of his uncles were all important in the Orthodox Christian Church.
That's right. Tesla's family is Serbian, and they belong to the Serbian Orthodox Church. Croatians and Austrians, by contrast, are actually Roman Catholics. And so if you go there today, one of the things that the Serbs want to engage you in is to understand who you are. They want to know what your religious background is, and that's very important to them.
In your book, it seems to me that you bring out that there are at least two fundamental things that happen in Tesla's life that have to affect how his mind developed later. One is there is significant illness a number of times in his life. The other is he is surrounded by people who think about certain things related to religion different than much of the Western world.
Let's take the second part first, which is one of the big insights that I had in writing the book was while Tesla was never a religious sort of person, that he went to church and that he prayed regularly, he clearly was inspired by what he learned from his father and his uncles, who were all priests in the Serbian Orthodox Church. And the Serbian Orthodox Church is like the Greek Orthodox or the Russian Orthodox. And one of the key beliefs in Orthodox theology is the notion of logos, which is that everything in nature and everything that is made by man, you know, any material invention or machine or device, has inside it a divine principle, a divine spark. Now, that doesn't mean that they believe that, you know, they're not pantheists and that they believe that every little woodland creature has its own little god or anything, but they believe that it reflects the second person in the Trinity. And this logos was very important for Tesla because he came away thinking that everything has an underlying principle to it, and that the job of an inventor is to identify and understand that underlying principle and then to build the machine or the device around that ideal. And so one of the key parts of his life is he's always seeking the ideal that's in the invention. And in fact, he later says, I was as successful an inventor as I was because I was such a perfect instrument for capturing or receiving the ideal. And that puts him in a very different place than Edison, because Tesla is looking for the underlying principle behind things, an abstraction. And as he develops that, then he goes and he realizes it in a machine. Whereas Edison, by contrast, if you think of Tesla as a top-down sort of guy, Edison is a bottom-up. In other words, everything that Edison knows, he really knows because he's tinkering with it and he's experimenting with it. He's always fussing around with things on the laboratory benchtop. And that's how Edison knew and learned things. He had a real kinesthetic sense of how to do things. Tesla, on the other hand, I think if you went in and you sort of said, so I want to follow you around for the day and see what you do when you're an inventor. And Tesla would probably say, well, that's fine, but you'll probably be bored pretty quickly because I'm going to spend most of the day just sort of sitting here thinking and occasionally writing things on my blackboard or going to the laboratory.
And that stuff that was going on in his head, that thinking, also influenced by something else you go into in detail, Bernie Carlson, in your book, his illnesses, including his experiences fairly early on of having what today we might call hallucinations or visions, and how he interpreted those.
I'm not sure they were hallucinations, but let me describe what he talks about in his autobiography. We're very fortunate that in 1919, Tesla, at the sort of full maturity of his life, writes quite a long autobiography. And there he says that when I was a kid, when I was a child, and we're now talking 6, 7, 8, 9, even into his early adolescence, he had a vivid imagination where if you said, I always imagine it this way, you said ice cream, he would immediately see kind of in his mind's eye and actually kind of right out in front of him the ice cream cone. And then that's fine if it's ice cream because that's kind of a happy thing and you could deal with that. But imagine that something sad or terrible happened. Well, he'd see that and he couldn't shake that vision. And it really plagued him. And it was, of course, it disturbed his sleep at night and he would have terrible nightmares and he'd really see these nightmares in vivid terms. And what happens in his life, which is really one of the powerful turning points, is when he's about 12, he reads a novel that's written by a Hungarian novelist, but in the style of Sir Walter Scott. And it's like an Ivanhoe novel. So there's heroes and there's damsels in distresses and so on and so forth. But the important thing about the novel that Tesla read is as a young man becomes the hero by developing willpower and discipline. And Tesla decides, I am going to conquer these nightmares and hallucinations by controlling them in my mind, by basically becoming a master of my imagination. And so he begins to go, instead of on scary experiences, on pleasant and enjoyable journeys and develops worlds within worlds within worlds. I mean, I think later in life, he was a great fan when he was an older man of being able to go to the movies. I think this is a fellow that if he was alive today, he would be addicted to video games.
But he created whole movies, whole worlds inside his head. And this illness, whether they were hallucinations or something else, seemed to be, at least from what I understand of your book, Bernie, a place where he learned to develop and strengthen his mind and his mental abilities in the way that few human beings ever even considered doing.
He absolutely had probably the most powerful imagination that I've certainly ever encountered. That is to say that this is somebody who could really develop whole systems of electrical machinery and swap out parts and imagine that, you know, and see what would happen if you change this piece and this piece.
And does
it
all in his head.
And does it all in his head. He does have, now he maintained that there were never any sketches, and there are sketches in the archives. They're not great, but there are sketches in the archives, and there are lab models that he did. But the key thing is he could do so much of this in his head. And add to that, Tom, that not only did he imagine the machines in his head, he imagined the world that went with these machines in his head. And that's really one of the most powerful things. In other words, he wasn't just worrying about, okay, how do I actually get it to work? How's this going to change society? So when he's thinking about wireless power, he can picture how New York City, which was his home from 1884 to when he dies in 1943, how is New York City going to look different? How are people going to live their lives differently? What kind of work are they going to have? And I think that was another incredible feature of his life, which is he not only thought about the machine, but he thought about the applications and the social order that would come from them.
I got to tell you, I look at the simplest possible machine now. I'm spatially challenged, but the idea of just trying to understand how those parts go together as I look at it baffles me. The idea that there's a human being who can absolutely imagine inventing some of the most complex machines and figure out how all the parts work and fit together in his head is, for me, mind-boggling. But the book is titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. Its author, Bernie Carlson, is our guest. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. And if you have a question or comment for our guest, something you want to check out that you've heard about Nikola Tesla, some theory of your own that you want to offer, we'd be glad to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. Or you can post to us on our Facebook page, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. And we have this on the Insight Facebook page from Skyler, who says, I learned about Tesla in my JMU University physics class. He was only talked about as a unit of magnetic field strength. I don't know what that means. I learned later how cool he was. What are a few things people will be doing soon with his contributions to science? Oh, good speculation. I love this.
Oh, yes, speculation. I think we've already talked on the major thing, which is the wireless transmission of power. And there are people, and indeed there's a small, I think it's a $25,000 prize that someone out in Colorado has offered for significant improvements in the wireless transmission of power. And indeed, earlier in July, there's actually an alternative energy conference, and there a number of the Tesla researchers go and show their latest developments and their latest efforts in this particular area. So I think we'll continue to see that. One of the things that Tesla got very interested in, which again was a surprise to me because I never saw much of it in the other earlier books, was that he really was interested in basically transmitting electricity to airplanes and using the electricity to power the motors that would turn the propellers in an airplane. And indeed, in the 1980s, a series of Canadian researchers using microwaves were able to fly at least a model airplane around that was essentially powered by electricity from the Earth. In other words, it didn't have to carry all of its own fuel and energy, that it was getting the energy from the ground. And I to me, that's one of the great fascinations. Tesla also worked in the early 20th century on a new type of steam turbine. Most turbines are like jet engines in that the steam basically does its job by following or flows through the engine in parallel to the main axle or the main shaft of the jet engine. Tesla had an idea that you'd have the steam come in at right angles, and if you made very thin turbine blades and had exactly the right space between the blades, you could actually get the turbine to turn. And they've had some very successful work in those particular things. Again, it hangs on alloys and the right materials.
Thank you very much for that question, Skyler. We actually had a call from Bill, but apparently we lost his cell signal.
Bill, come back.
But I understand he was going to ask where Faraday fits into the mix. You talked about Edison,
sure.
And Tesla.
Yeah. So Michael Faraday is a very famous British scientist, and he is active in the 1820s and up until about the 1860s. And around 1830, Faraday solves what was one of the great puzzles in science for his time, which was the relationship between electricity, magnetism, and motion. And Faraday is the one who figures out that you can basically, by coordinating, Faraday shows that if you move an electric wire, a conductor, through a magnetic field at right angles, you can actually get an electric current that is induced, generated in the wire. And Faraday works that out. And he also works out the reverse principle, which is if you send a current through an electric wire and the wire is in a magnetic field, you can actually have the magnetic field and the electric wire will push against each other and you can have motion. So Faraday is at the heart of all the things that Edison and Tesla do, but he's a scientist and he doesn't reduce it into practical technologies the way Tesla and Edison did.
Would it be accurate to say, Bernie Carlson, that Tesla is a hero of conspiracy theorists?
Yes, there are many people that are absolutely convinced that he was taken advantage of first by Edison and then by J.P. Morgan, and that we would have free energy if those guys had not gotten in the way.
So I want to ask you more about that, and we got to get to this whole thing about what we could be learning from Tesla in today's world that has the potential to completely change our world. We'll be back in 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Among Bernie Carlson's previous writings are the titles Technology in World History, as well as Innovation as a Social Process. But it is his newest book that's our focus today, and it is titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. In your view, Bernie Carlson, Nikola Tesla's way of inventing is something that the world today can benefit from understanding.
Absolutely. Tesla was, and what I learned in working on him, is a major insight into disruptive innovations, which is now a very
disruptive innovation.
That's right. There's a great deal of interest in the sort of technologies that create entirely new industries and reorganize our lives. So, for example, the internet or the Wright brothers and the airplane. Alternating current in the 1890s was one of these technologies that created whole new businesses, allowed people to use electricity in new ways in their lives. So Tesla is a great example of disruptive innovation.
So whether it's
the steam engine.
Or personal computers. We're talking about things that are hard to imagine, I guess, after they enter into our lives. But we're talking about things, if you can imagine what life was before them and then see the world after them, they have, in fact, changed the world dramatically.
They have done amazing things that reorganize how we experience life.
As opposed to what you call incremental innovations, which would be the latest new app for my smartphone.
That's right. Or changing the color of dustpans or, or, you know, God bless
something
me.
That keeps people buying new
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly. And the success of any economy is you always have a mix of incremental and disruptive innovations. The incremental are there because people need to continue to consume new products. Businesses have to have that demand for those new products in order to take advantage of the large-scale investments that they make in mass production in big factories.
So but part of your philosophy, Bernie Carlson, is that if we had a better understanding of how someone like Nikola Tesla created disruptive innovations, we would have a better understanding about how future radical change to the world could be done. In improvement change.
That's right. We'd be able to direct it in ways that we want, and we'd probably be able to have some of the do it in a much more orderly and productive fashion. When you talk about disruptive innovation, and I work for an engineering school, and I really enjoy being there, but when I sort of start getting on about breakthrough technologies and things that are not incremental innovations, most of my colleagues sort of all kind of back away from me, and they sort of say, we know how to teach incremental innovation. We know how to teach design. But this disruptive stuff, this stuff that Tesla does, well, he did it because he's a wacko. He's a crazy guy.
But most people think that what you call disruptive innovation, something that is so new and so radical and has so much impact that it literally changes the world, happens by accident or happens by luck.
Or they basically say it's just got to be genius, and Tesla did what he did because he's a genius. Well, how do we know he's a genius? Because he did all these amazing things. So you get into these genius is a wonderful term, but you get into these circular arguments with it. And what I was able to do with this book, and what I want to get people to think about, not just Tesla's historic accomplishments, but also his process and his method of invention is just disruptive innovations come about because there are actually strategies and practices that people like Tesla used. In other words, it wasn't just one lucky break after another. And sure, there are some good things that happened to him. I mean, he was...
So what are some of those strategies?
So one of the strategies that he had was again, we were talking about his imagination. And he was someone who really believed, and I think there are a number of creative individuals that really are subjective thinkers, to use a term that comes from a famous economist, Joseph Schumpeter. And these are individuals that basically say that the big idea comes from within you. You think of it, it comes from within you, and the journey, the task, is to impose it out on the world. And that's the way Tesla operated. He had that hunch. He would often have a hunch or an intuition. So there might be a moment of a flash of insight when he was working on the alternating current motor, or the moment that really counted for him was he was in Budapest after he had been studying in the engineering school in Austria. He went to Budapest in Hungary, and there the sun is going down. He has a new best friend. He's reciting poetry, and boom, he has this moment of insight as to how to build a better alternating current motor. Now, what we talked about a few moments ago, when he was a kid, what did he learn? He learned how to take that idea and roll it around in his mind and develop it and keep working away at it. And he really could do that in a disciplined fashion. We tend to think, I don't know, whatever's happening in imagination has got to be undisciplined. It's got to be irrational. And Tesla had an ability to do that. And then he would test it out. He would analyze and he would think it through so that there was not just an imagination piece, but there was a rigorous thinking piece. And that's at the heart of the way he worked on problems.
But you also say in your book, Tesla, inventor of the electrical age, that he was willing to do the opposite of conventional thinking. That while everybody else was trying to find new ways to go in a front door, he'd look for a back door.
And it's an interesting mix, I think, of emotional support and personal comfort level, but he's definitely had an ability to live with the ambiguity and the problems of basically doing things in an opposite way. So when he was working on the alternating current motor, he thought, make a great motor, you got to have 4 or 6 wires going from the generator to the motor. Well, if you were an engineer at Westinghouse or working for Edison at that point, anything more than 2 wires is too many. It's a waste of copper wire. And yet he stuck with it all the way through and was able to have that high tolerance for thinking outside the box. We often sort of say, Tom, you can be a great inventor, just think outside the box. Well, that's great. But do you have the ability to hold that idea in your mind's eye and shape it and edit it the way that, say, someone like Tesla has? So you have
But
to,
your theory here, I think what you're proposing is that we can learn from Tesla and we can look for the kind of disruptive innovations that are going to radically change our world for the better if we think differently about how we think.
That's right. Yeah. If we, again, I'm a big believer in that there's a movement to supplement science, technology, engineering, and medicine, STEM education, which is so important at the K-12 level, with STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics, because the art piece represents a reminder to people that you've got to complement the rigorous thinking with the development of a vivid imagination. And so much of, unfortunately, of what we sometimes do in K-12 science education is as we sort of say to Johnny and Sally, you've got to master the math, you've got to master the physics, you've got to do the calculus. And we kill off the highly creative side that is so important to being able to do disruptive breakthroughs. There's another piece that also is illustrated well by Tesla and Steve Jobs, which is, along with being able to do the vivid imagination, you also have to be able to link up that breakthrough technology with beliefs and ideas that are going on. And
so I want to ask you more about that in a moment, but Frank
please.
Has been holding on here for
Frank.
Quite a while. This, by the way, is, you just joined us, technology historian Bernie Carlson, our guest. Frank in Harrisonburg, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment for Dr. Carlson, please.
Well, I will tell you, his last comment made his book worth buying just to discover what he's saying, because I found that totally fascinating. I discovered Nikola Tesla when I was 16 years old back, no, 14 years old back in 1960, and built Odeon Tesla coils and used it to light up fluorescent lights from across the room, and I found it absolutely fascinating. High-frequency induction, is that correct, how it works?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah, and I found that, so we kept building bigger and bigger ones so we could light up fluorescent lights from all the way across the house.
Oh, I love it.
So that's about as deep as I got with Tesla, except I know he was trying to produce very high power usage of this high-frequency electron, I assume he called it an ether at that time.
Frank, I'm sorry, we are having a little bit of trouble with your cell phone line or our hookup to you, but I just want to double check. You said this was in high school in the 1960s when you first heard about Tesla? Frank, you still there? We may have lost Frank's call, but that I want to turn over to you, Bernie, because the fact of the matter is, for most people who were in high school, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, they didn't hear any. They heard about Edison, they heard about Marconi, Nikola Tesla, not so much.
All through that period that you're talking about, Tom, is the Cold War. And the sort of people that make their way into history books or into science books are the people that represent the virtues that we think are important for students to pick up on. And Edison was the great Yankee inventor, and he was a very practical sort of individual, and he always made sure that his inventions wound up creating household names and businesses. And so all through that period, he's emphasized, the other thing that's emphasized is the importance of basic research that is going to, and research in the sciences that's going to pay off in terms of new products. This is the 50s and 60s are a period where corporate R&D at places like Bell Labs is absolutely at its height. And so Tesla falls between those two cracks. He's neither a scientist like you would find at Bell Labs or the R&D labs at General Electric, and at the same time, he's not a Yankee. He's not American born, and he's not focused on business the way that Edison did. So, not surprisingly, he doesn't serve any useful purpose for American culture until you really get into the late 1960s and 70s, when to some extent via the counterculture, people are beginning to say, we can think about creativity in new and different ways. So we can get in touch with our mystical sides.
Defend for me the assertion made in your title, Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age, that Nikola Tesla was the inventor of the electrical age.
The publisher and I picked that title for a couple of reasons. First and foremost, we wanted to say he illustrates so well what is happening in this age, what it means to create an age of electricity, and that he is emblematic of that particular period. In other words, he's someone that if you want to know how the electrical revolution that changed our lives took place, then he's one of the people you want to know about. The other definition of Tesla as inventor of the electrical age, in other words, the emphasis on the, is that Tesla is one of the few individuals in this time period who basically spans both parts of the way that we use electricity today. He's deeply involved in electrical power, and he's also deeply involved in communications and electronics. And there is nearly no one else that has quite the same sort of level of experience that has both a foot in electronics and a foot in power engineering. And those are the things that make for the coming of the electrical age, that both those things happened.
We talked some about the fact that there are some conspiracy theorists who love Nikola Tesla and his story. There also are people who see him as a mystic. Explain that to me.
In some ways, the conspiracy theory really comes about towards the end of Tesla's life. In the 1930s, when he's down on his luck and he's really not got a whole lot of other things going on, and begins with his 75th birthday, he begins to have every July a birthday press conference. And in one of those press conferences, he announces that he's solved the problem about long-range bombers, in that he has developed a particle beam weapon that will protect America from long-range bombers flying over the ocean and basically bombing Washington or New York City or Philadelphia. And he goes on ahead and he discusses that and produces at least one paper along those lines. Well, when Tesla dies in 1943, J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI decide that we don't know whether this is a crackpot idea or there's something to it. We don't care. We're seizing his papers. So they seized his papers and basically locked them up from 1943 to 1951. And, of course, the very fact that they seized the papers is, for conspiracy people, proof that he must have had a secret weapon and that it was going to work just the way he said it was going to work. And then add to that, in the 1970s, there was an Air Force general who they used to do these flyovers first with U-2 planes and then with satellites over the Soviet Union. And an Air Force general came to the conclusion that the Soviets had actually gotten a hold of ideas from Tesla's papers that had gone in 1951 from the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in the United States to Belgrade, Serbia, where they now are housed in a Nikola Tesla museum. And that the Soviet scientists must have looked at the papers and had developed their own particle beam weapon. And, oh, my God, there was a particle beam weapon gap. And that the United States had to catch up and follow through and develop this. And, again, this plays into the whole conspiracy mindset, which is, well, if the Soviets built one and they probably based it on Tesla, then, oh my God, you know, he really was all involved in this. And these, you know, who else, what else do you suppose the federal government is keeping secret from us? So
Bernie
much
Carlson,
of his story is around that.
We've got less than 30 seconds left. Let me go back to the first question I asked. If somebody knows very little or even nothing about Nikola Tesla, what do you think it's most important that they now do know?
That Tesla was not just a mystical character and an interesting guy to have in a video game, but that he was a real historical individual who did create the age of electricity and shape the way we use electricity and electronics in our lives.
And one lesson maybe we could draw from the way he invented is to start thinking about combining science, technology, engineering, math, and art.
That imagination counts.
Our guest has been historian Bernie Carlson, a professor of science, technology, and society, as well as a professor of history at the University of Virginia. And once again, his new book is titled Tesla, Inventor of the Electrical Age. Bernie, thanks so much for making time for us.
Tom, it's been great to be on the show.
Wait another 7 years before we have you back, okay?
Amen, brother.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Extra help today from Susan Comfort and Dan Easley. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about the work Dr. Carlson is doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.